Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe on iTunes, just search for the Guelph Politicast. Today I am talking to Shan Motway, a community organizer here in Guelph. You may not know Shan's name, but you'll probably know her work. She ran for city council in 2014 in Ward 2, but lost to Andy Van Hellman and James Gordon, but it was during that campaign she came up with the Transit Challenge, pushing candidates and then councillors to take the bus to learn more about the challenges facing mass transit in the city. She's also the one behind Murals of Hope, an endeavor to turn walls and urban spaces into works of art with the support of local businesses and through mentoring young artists to create the murals. Currently, though, she's tying one on, collecting hats, scarves, and gloves, and leaving them around the downtown for anyone that needs them. In my conversation with Shan, we talk about her various philanthropic endeavors and her inspiration, how she measures success on a project, and the various challenges in raising money, awareness, and interest in her charitable works. When we met on Monday, the news about the closure of the Guelph Mercury was just a couple of hours old, so I also asked her what effect that losing the Guelph Mercury will have on local organizations and people like her who are always looking for sponsorship, support, and publicity for the things that they're trying to do in the community. So without further ado, I caught up with Shan Motway earlier this week at Planet Bean downtown. Okay, Shan Motway, thanks for talking to me today.
You're welcome.
The big news today, we're recording on Monday, was that the Mercury is putting out its final edition on Friday, and I know you. If we Google your name, a lot of links to Mercury articles will come up, and I mean, obviously that's important to the things you do as a community organizer. So if you could talk about what the loss of the Mercury is going to mean to you in terms of getting the word out and finding sponsors for your events and projects.
Well, I just heard about it from you, and so I use the Mercury for two things. One, like you said, to get information out about my events, but I've really gotten to know the reporters, so I have a really good reputation. So when something comes up, they just automatically call me. But one of the things I'll miss the most is I physically sit down and read the old-fashioned paper every day with my scissors, and I look for sponsors, and I look for companies that may have money that might want to help us. So the Mercury, to me, is a huge part of my fundraising day. So I'm shocked. I'm very surprised about it, and I'll be disappointed because I can't get in the Mercury, so we're hiding another source now.
So you basically coupon
the Mercury.
The Mercury,
yeah.
For sponsors.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was a project you have going on right now, the Taiwan On campaign, where you're gathering donated toques and scarves and mittens and gloves and putting up around downtown. So if people are wanting in winter, they can tie one on or tie one off, as it were. So how did that idea begin?
Well, it kind of started about 4 years ago when Biltmore Hats went out of business. They donated a bunch of hats to us that I used to sell and raise funds for, at the time it was Bracelet of Hope. But when I was going through the hats, I realized they had a lot of winter hats. So I'm like, I noticed they weren't selling to the people that were buying them. So I put them all aside in a big bag. And so, ironically, it kind of started with Biltmore Hats. And then I saw something on Facebook in the States a couple years ago, and I thought, we could do this in Guelph. Guelph is a great place to do this. So, yeah, that's kind of how it got started.
It's weird that one sort of campaign goes into another, that it starts as this fundraiser to, I mean, it sounds like it basically to offload Access Hats from Biltmore's closing, and then it becomes a different type of charitable endeavor altogether.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I met my friend Anne from Buds, because I sold the Biltmore hats through Buds. She let me use her store for 2 Saturdays in a row, and I was able to raise $4,000. Because they were $100 hats that I was selling. So that's how I met Anne and realized that she was very involved in the community. So when I thought about this 2 years ago, she was the first person I went to. So, yeah.
Biltmore has, of course, another Guelph Institute.
Yes, I know. Gone. It's gone. It's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a peppy
yeah,
one.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
and it comes to something like the Taiwan On, a lot of charities like to measure their success, but in terms of taking and leaving of winter garments, yep. How do you measure that success?
I'm lucky because I work at the Life Center. I get to see a lot of people that might have taken a hat off of the tree. And so I measure it by just seeing them wearing them. Like, we had a gentleman recently that walked in, and he had one of those suede hats from Biltmore Hats. And he was so excited. And I'm going, you got that off the trees? And he's, yeah, I did. And so I measure it that way, and I also measure it how fast it goes. Like, they're up and gone. Like, right now the trees are empty. We have some more coming in from some high school students from Ross, apparently. But right now the trees are empty. So that tells me we've over 200 hats and scarves have gone easily this winter so far, so yeah.
Have you been finding, because it's been a couple of years you've been doing this, do you find that the hats and stuff are going faster, that it...
I think so, because this year there was a lot of Twitter stuff. I wasn't on Twitter last year, Now I'm on Twitter. So it was kind of cool, because there's a lot of Twitter stuff, and people would say, I put some stuff up, and when I went to look, it was already gone, so... and one of my best stories is last year when I was doing it, I had some older ladies that had hand-knitted scarves, mitts, and hats, and they had missed the campaign and they were upset. So I said, I'll put them in a bag and I'm going to hold on to them for you. So this time I got to bag them up in Ziploc bags and just tack them to the tree, and they went right away. And it was just, it's just an exciting thing because everybody gets involved. So
yeah,
yeah.
In terms of you said when you started this, it was, that initial donation from Biltmore. But how do you build that base of support in terms of getting hats and recruiting people to leave you hats and scarves and all that kind of thing? Because it's not just about putting the stuff up. You also have to get it as well.
Yeah. So I was lucky because I still had stuff left over from last year. My friend Anne at Bud's, she got a... Because the store closed at Bud's, another institution we're losing in Guelph. Three down. She happened to have a lot of hats and scarves. So she had that. So this year we were very well equipped. Next year will probably be more of a challenge. I think I'll have to start earlier saying, hey, this is what we're doing. Because I've depleted all of my hat funds myself. So next year I'm going to do more tweeting in advance. And I think people will look forward to it as an event. I'm going to miss the Mercury, though, because they're all over it. We're even on their cover page. I'm like, yeah. So, yeah.
It's worth noting Bud's was a Kitchener store first.
Yes,
so maybe
I know.
It's two and a half.
Yeah, maybe. Yes, maybe.
In terms of, how things grow, how these campaigns grow, it does seem like it begins as a lark. It begins as an idea that just pops in your head, and then it becomes...
Something
at what
cool.
point does it become like the chore, the thing you do? Maybe not a chore in terms of like, oh, I can't believe I have to collect hats again, but just in terms of the expectation that exists that you will always be doing this every January.
Yeah. I think it's kind of... There's an expectation there, and I actually felt bad this year. I was off sick for a week, so I had to have somebody go de-snow the hats for me. I would normally go shake all the hats off and put them back on. I don't know if it will ever become a chore for me, because... part of the reason Anne and I are such great friends is we really love to give back to the community. It's something I'm going to do anyhow, and it's just, I think it's going to be a yearly event that I'm going to look forward to. So next year I'll just do more advertising for it, and I want to get more high schools involved, like Ross will be helping us, and I think that's important. I think if everybody knitted one hat or gave away one hat they got for Christmas they didn't like, because to me that's the funnest thing, seeing someone take a hat off the tree that they absolutely adore. I had a lady come by. I just put up some suede hats with lamb's wool, or the inside was lamb something. And she goes, "Is this real?" And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "I've never had an expensive hat."
Wow.
And so that's the reason I'm going to keep doing it. She put it on her head, and she's like, "This looks good on me." I said, "You look awesome." And it was suede, and it was lamb, and it was so cool. So, yeah.
Hearing about all the various things you do, like, and it's not just the time went on, you're also involved with Murals of Hope. I think a lot of people might be curious in terms of how one gets started becoming a jack of all community organizing things and giving back. And
It actually goes way back. When I was a young child, my mom started working at school for the mentally challenged, and she just back. Okay, so I'm old. I'm 52. Back in the day, that's fine. So back in the day, it was more of a fighting the system thing. So we were putting in a group home for mentally challenged people, and back in Oakville, where they were putting it was in a rich part of town, and people were upset about it. So we're talking 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So my mother got us involved, and I was not allowed to. I always had to help people. It's the way she was brought up. My kids have been brought up the same way. My son has done a lot of my artwork. All of my kids volunteer on a regular basis. So it's something I've been brought up. It's in my blood. It's in my family. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right thing to do as a human being.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Murals of Hope, because I know you have a new project going on. And that seems like another thing that's difficult to coordinate. I mean, it's great to see them around town.
Yep.
But in terms of you know, having to find walls, getting permission, getting sponsors.
Yeah, that is quite the interesting thing, actually. One, finding sponsors, finding people who want to pay for it. Second is finding an artist that's willing to work on it in their free time. Right now I have one at the library, and I'm so excited because they let me have it there till the end of January, but then I have to move it. Mm-hmm. So I was running around today trying to find another location to put this mural. Because part of it is, if you go to the library, you'll see she's painted stones. Right. So what's going to happen is, I already have a sponsor, but people can come and sign a brick for $20 or $10. And so that's part of the mural. It also raises funds for another charity. So yeah, that's another adventure that takes a lot of my time. Yeah.
We talked a bit about, before we started recording, about you ran for city council in 2014.
Yep.
Did that experience, sort of trying on being political and taking on local problems that way, did that give you any new perspective on the things you do, like Murals of Hope? And
Most definitely, because the whole reason I ran is I lived in Ward 2.
Right.
A lot of the people I help live in Ward 2. I ride the buses. So the reason I ran is, once again, it's in my blood. I wasn't running to be the special political person or make an agenda. I was running for my people. Mm-hmm. I was running for the people in poverty, the people that take the buses. So I did learn a lot, because before I even thought to run, I spent a year in city council just listening. And I was amazed at how much the city of Guelph, if you come and be a delegate, how much effect you can actually have on council. So, and it's a great place to meet sponsors, especially the developers. They come in there and tell me about their million-dollar projects. I'm like, yes, get their card. So, yeah.
You didn't win, obviously.
No.
But
it wasn't my time.
Well, is that something you might want to try again?
Yeah, I think I will try it again. Right now, I'd like to get Murals of Hope and grow it to the extent that it was before. Mm-hmm. So when I ran it as a charity, I was all across Ontario doing it. And my personal goal right now is to be able to pay the mural artist something. Mm-hmm. Because artists, they just don't make money. And if they do, it's very little. So one of my new goals is to have the artist actually get some money on top of just like token thank yous and stuff. I've used a lot of co-op students, and they love it. They come and do it as part of their thing, and they're learning a new skill. They have to publicly paint, which is a hard thing to do. They get nervous, and then you have to coach them and mentor them. And to me, that's part of the fun of running the charity, is just mentoring people and encouraging them to grow.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about the current mural that was working on it. Mm-hmm. You said it was a transit mural.
Yes. It's for the bus drivers themselves are sponsoring it.
Oh, yeah.
So the bus union gave me the initial donation. And the hope is that all the bus drivers that I bug in a nice way will come and sign their names on it, because it is their mural. The goal is to have it eventually go into a staff room, but we don't know where that is right now for the bus drivers.
So it's not going to be on a wall somewhere?
It will be on a wall, but right now it's on the library wall.
Right.
It's moving somewhere else, very local, and I can't tell you because I haven't firmed it up. And then when it's finally done, it's going to go to the staff room of the bus drivers. And I'm not sure where that is. I've heard talks, but yeah. So it's going to move three times. That's unusual for one of my murals. They usually go and they stay, but yeah.
can you say what it's going to be about? Like, do you know what it might look like vaguely?
Mural's already almost done.
Oh, okay.
So what it is my co-op student has taken the different aspects of transit. So the initial stage transit, when it was on the rails in Guelph, mobility, the 1970s, and then also what transit is today. So it's kind of cool. And then in the middle is three distinct bus drivers, not painted like anyone, but just to represent the different ethnic groups that drive buses.
Yeah. Did the co-op student come up with the concept? Or
I kind of gave her the concept in the sense that I said, let's do it through the ages. But she did all the design work herself, and she's very talented. Yeah.
Great. And I know transit's a big deal to you.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before. So one of the things on the plate this year is kind of, this is going to be a transition year. Swords are talking about making transit changes next year.
Yep.
Are you optimistic that that's going to come through? Because I have my own points of view, obviously.
Yep.
But I do like to talk to people who do take the bus and have that point of view.
I don't know. I was lucky. I got several people on, several counselors onto the buses. But I am concerned because initially when they talked about the new routes, they were coming this fall.
Right.
Now I don't hear anything about those new routes. I'm a little concerned. Like, I think there needs to be a lot of changes with transit. I would like to really see more bus shelters. When you're standing outside and it's minus 15 and you're waiting for the bus, or you miss the bus, it's a long wait in the cold. So I don't know. So much is up in the air right now because of the cutbacks they're saying at City Council. So we had a lot of people get up and be delegates, myself included. So we were able to save some of the issues, but they're still talking about cutting it, so I'll just have to keep on fighting and driving the poor counselors crazy. But yeah.
Well, that campaign was to get more counselors on the bus was, I think, important, because one of the things I confront in terms of talking about transit issues in Guelph is I don't think a lot of people, either when we're talking about city councilors, when we're talking about the people who are in charge of transportation in Guelph on a staff level.
Yep.
I don't think they really appreciate
I would love to get them on the buses too. That's why I initially try to put it out there, because Phil Alt and Leanne Piper went on the buses for a month, and that was awesome. I took June Hoffman on the bus. But what people don't realize is if you're on the bus and there's a train coming, you're stopped.
Right.
You get here, and then there's no buses waiting for you, and you have to wait. And if you're going to an appointment or you have a job, you're going to get in trouble. And that was one of the big things I talked about in my debate, is unless you need the buses, you really don't care. It's an essential service to people who have disabilities, live in poverty, one-income families. But people that don't have to take the buses, they don't honestly really don't care. And that's kind of sad.
And you were really pointed in some of your challenges, because you really stood up to the mayor. And, Dan Gibson as well, you regularly dared them to try and get to the church service at 9 a.m. on Sunday.
Yeah, because the thing is, I took that challenge myself, because I always do it myself. It took me 2 hours to do that. And that was on the half-hour schedule, right? Because I got there and the bus was detoured, so on the way an extra half hour. And it was a 25-minute walk from the last bus stop to there. And I used to go to Lakeside myself. So there's a 9 o'clock service. If you are on the music committee, like I know Cam and his wife are, he won't be able to do it because you can't get there by 9 o'clock. And that's what I was just trying to say, is just think of the people that do have to go, right? Like, that's their way of life. And I know that Dan's son was sick, but part of the point for me was, if you have to use the buses, you're taking kids that are sick in strollers on the buses, you're going to doctor's appointments on the buses, you're doing a grocery shop on the buses. And it was great to see Phil and Leanne talk about it, because Phil talked about it. Sometimes he cheated and rode his bike because you just couldn't get to where he wanted to go in time, right?
Yeah.
So,
or sometimes it's more direct.
Yeah, yeah, it's more direct. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes when you Google it, they send you on a really, really crazy route. So one of the things I'm fighting for is to get the loop back that used to go Speedville and Woodlawn. Because right now, if I want to go to Dawson Medical Clinic, it's a 20-minute walk, a 5-minute car ride. If I take the bus, it's 55 minutes one way.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of older people needing to go down there.
Right.
If there was the loop, they could just go down, do the appointment, come back on the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Are you finding perhaps things are more receptive now? And I've talked to Phil about this on the radio show last year, and Cam as well,
mm-hmm.
that it seems that after the lockout in 2014, there was a recognition that there's a problem, and perhaps people are more receptive to doing something about it now. Is are you finding that?
I'm finding what I'm finding, and I'll get shot for this one, but when I ran my campaign, my whole thing was, I'm not going to make you promises. I'm really not going to make you promises, because it's just one vote, right? So I did hear a lot of promises. I heard a lot of promises about poverty. I heard a lot of promises about the library, about the buses. I don't see a lot of those promises coming through. And so, yeah, sure, maybe some people made some promises to the bus drivers and the bus riders, say, we're going to fix this, but I honestly haven't seen it. And my proof in that is just that they were going to cut the services again. We fought last year. I had a fight again this year. I'm going to be fighting again next year. And so, as someone who ran for politics, I don't know. I'm not big on people who make promises and then don't hold to it. So, no, I really don't see a lot of changes. Yeah.
Does that ever deflate your passion? Because I think, you know, a lot of people want to do what you do and be positive and support the community. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the old saying, you can't fight City Hall. But
well, and you know what? I do take quite a beating for it.
Not a literal beating.
No, not a literal. Well, I did have my house egged during the elections.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got my house egged, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of the women got their houses egged, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about, you know, the harassment stuff. I didn't hear about you getting your house egged.
Yeah, yeah. My husband was all excited. He's like, yeah, you're somebody. You're pissing someone off. And I'm like, so.
that's turning a frown upside down.
it is frustrating, because I don't know if you were there the day when I Cam had said something upset me, and I had a really bad headache. I was bordering on a migraine, and it shut me down.
Right.
I try not to let that happen to me. And I know I'm sure there's several counselors that don't like me, and they're not going to like me, because I'm going to keep on fighting for the things I believe in. And it isn't discouraging. It really is discouraging. But I've been fighting this stuff since I was a kid. I have severe learning disabilities myself. I live with chronic pain, so I have an understanding that other people perhaps don't have. And my whole going to university and everything I've ever done is about helping people, special education people. And so, yeah, it is tiring, and I don't like the names I get called, and just people not liking you. I'm like, why? I'm trying to be a nice person. And yeah, I've had some battles, but yeah.
Man, how do you fight someone like that? Because I can't speak from personal experience of having my house egged, but it, you know, certainly a lot of the online stuff, and I know there was a lot of that in the last election. It comes from people who would never in a million years say that to your face.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And that's one of the problems about, and I see teenagers dealing with this. Social media, it is, you can say whatever you want, and people aren't really taking responsibility for it. So I've actually right now shut down my own personal Facebook account. I'm still doing the Murals of Hope account, but my own, because I'll say something and I'll get attacked. So sometimes I stop and I type it on and then I take it off, because I know people will react. But I try not to push too many buttons, except for where I think it needs to be pushed. And I think there's always, like, if you think back to the 60s, when people fought for the rights of black people or fought for the rights for women to vote, someone has to fight. And I feel I'm that person. And yes, it's discouraging, and I have my haters, but I just can't stop it. I have to do it, so.
Let's talk about something positive.
Sure, let's go for it.
In terms of something you want to do that you haven't had a chance to do yet, that is on your,
bucket
for lack
list?
Of a better term, bucket list, yeah.
Well, I used to be very, in university and high school, I was very much into being athletic.
Mm-hmm.
But my bad car accident where I hit a truck tire and flipped my car, I physically can't do a lot of stuff. I would really love to play tennis again. I don't know if that's going to happen. I would like to be a city councilor one day. I just don't know. If I had to give up all my charity work and everything I love to do it, then I might not do it. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is, yes, I didn't get in, and I don't have the power on that side, but I would have been one vote.
Right.
Whereas right now on this side, I can rally the people up and say, you know what, come and fight for it. Like, get out there and tell them what it is you're so mad about and talk about it. But I do try and encourage people to do it in a positive way.
Right.
One of my favorite things to do is, if I see something go wrong, I'll write a nice letter to a company. So I get a lot of free stuff, because I say, this is what happened, and this is how I think you could fix it, blah, blah, blah. And it's amazing when you talk positively, people will respect you. So I think most people respect me. And you're always, Mother Teresa had her haters. Like, everybody has their haters, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think maybe in this day and age we forget, can get more with a kind word sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my mom always said it takes 10 positive comments to get rid of one negative comment.
Yeah.
So I can have people tell me all the time, you're doing a great job, keep it up. One person says, Shan, la la la, and I'm like, oh. And like, and because I do have severe learning disabilities, I do get nervous, and then you'll see me fumble, and then I think, no, I need to do this, so.
And it does, like, there's, like, statistics that, you know, one positive comment is equal to about 10 different people, and the other 9 just don't say anything, too.
Yeah. And I wish I could remember, Mother Teresa wrote a list of 10 things, and it's something about people are gonna hate you for doing what you're doing, but do it anyhow. I can't think of what it's called. I wish I could remember. It's in the back of the book my husband wrote, but it basically says, just keep doing it. Like, mm-hmm. you can spend your whole life building something up, and it can be pulled away in 2 seconds, right? Like, I spent a year running for city councilor, and in one night I wasn't voted in, which to most people that's no big deal, but I spent a year prepping for that. Like, right. I put a lot of work into it, but yeah.
But you have to sort of accept, and you kind of have to accept that in any charitable endeavor, that there's the possibility it's not going to work, no matter how well you execute the plan and how much
true.
You prepare.
It's true. The only thing I have trouble with is, as a fundraiser, I do have to be careful on what I say sometimes, because the city is big, and I hate to say it, but a lot of people that might not like my opinions have money. So I do have to be careful, you know what I mean, sometimes on what I say, and that's why I stick mostly to helping the disadvantaged of Guelph versus getting into some of the other political debates I could. So,
If you could change one thing about Guelph, if you had the power, what do you think it would be? Like, if you didn't have to worry about the haters and the money and the organizing.
I know this is a silly request, but I would love a heated bus shelter downtown. I really would. Mm. I would wish that there is no homelessness in Guelph, but I don't know. Honestly, there's so much good about Guelph. I think Guelph is a great place to live. There's not much I would change except for my heated bus shelter. I honestly don't have anything really to tell you. Sorry. I know my kids.
Sorry, Guelph is so good.
No, well, it's not perfect, obviously. Well, I guess, okay, I would like every single person on the council, as well as people related to buses, to get on the bus and do the bus challenge for 1 week. How's that? That's my thing. Yeah.
Well, if people aren't haters, but would like to get in touch with you to talk more about Murals of Hope or Taiwan On or getting the Transit Challenge, whatever, how could people get in touch with
you? I am on Twitter now. Not like you, but it's everything's Murals of Hope. So it's Murals of Hope on Twitter, and you can send me a message like you did. My email account is muralsofhope@gmail.com. My phone number, if you want it, is 519-265-4535. Yeah. Oh, and Facebook. We have a great Murals of Hope Facebook account, and you can message me there as well. Or call you. You can be my guy. Shan, I got one for you. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I'm trying to maintain my
impartiality. No, I know. I'm okay.
But, Shan, I am not a hater.
That's
I appreciate
good.
The things you.
You
do, so thanks for talking to me today.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Once again, that was Shan Motway. You can follow her on Twitter @MuralsOfHope, or you can go to the Murals of Hope Facebook page, facebook.com/MuralsOfHope. That's all this week for the Guelph Politicast. The theme music for Guelph Politicast is provided by the Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down, which you can find on the Free Music Archive with other Crazy Pills songs. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Once again, go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU at 5 p.m., you can download it via Politicast channel on Podbean. And they're usually available either Monday or Tuesday, so you can check that out. And you can also subscribe on iTunes, and you will get every episode of the Guelph Politicast and Open Sources Guelph downloaded directly to your iTunes account. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter @adamadonaldson is my handle. And just a note, the Guelph Politico Patreon will be launching very, very soon. So if you are concerned about a lack of a full-time news outlet in Guelph, this is going to be for you. You'll be able to donate on a monthly or a one-time-only basis. All that information will be coming available very, very soon. So stay tuned for more information about the crowdsourcing campaign for Guelph Politico. And for all the latest local political news, feel free to check out Guelph Politico anytime, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, and there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you very, very shortly. Stay tuned for that, and until then, I'll see you next time.